Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday. Hey, it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And have a good, have a great day. Have a good morning. It's also a holiday weekend, so just go for it. Have a great time. We welcome you to our program. It is, we have a great group here. Let me introduce everybody to you. We just heard, by the way, the music this morning is The Restless Age. They're playing Hilo in North Adams on Saturday. That's tomorrow night. And we'll be playing them throughout the morning.
So we're in North Adams.
Massapequa?
No.
No, playing Hilo in North Adams.
Oh, Hilo.
Hilo.
That sounds like a casino to me.
yes, high or low. You're right. It's H-I-L-O. Hilo. Not Silo, but Hilo. Restless Age tomorrow. HiloNorthAdams.com for more information. All right, let me introduce everybody and we'll get started. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very good. I just want to send a special shout out there to the gentleman. Be sure to get that candy, get those flowers. And if she says, oh, you don't have to get me anything, do not believe
it. And no carnations.
Yeah, no carnations.
Yes. Oh, do not come with the carnations.
And one of the reasons I love my wife as much as I do is she said to me last night, she said, remember, now we've been married 25 years, but she said, remember, if you get me flowers, I will hate you.
Really?
Yeah. No, because she wants flowers. She wants flowers like every week in, you know, throughout the summer, like good flowers. She wants, you know, that's what she wants.
I like her style.
Yeah. I didn't quite get the carnations business. Carnations are no-no?
Oh, they're cheesy.
Well, they're not
roses. Yeah. Cheesy, cheesy.
Yeah. Carnations bring back a lot of bad memories for me because in middle school, you know, if someone sent you a carnation, it meant that you would... I had no carnations. There were other dudes I hung out with that had bouquets. And this brother never got one carnation. So it's just terrible memories.
So here's the flower advice. Just get a nice bouquet of spring flowers and skip the vase because everyone has too many vases. It's a good waste reduction tip. And they don't have to encircle it in plastic. So just like loose.
Environmental tip for Valentine's Day.
Yes, a green Valentine's Day. So it's just a loose spring bouquet expensive, but
who's
no vase.
Who's that talking over there?
Oh, who?
You were going
I'm
going to
go around. Yeah, I'll go around. Yeah,
they could guess. who's rooting really? Valentine's Day? Wah, wah. And that chocolate better be fair trade and organic. Wah, wah.
Oh, for God's sakes.
I can keep going.
I know.
And no plastic.
The voice you just heard is Judith Egg. She's senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator. Good morning, Judith Egg.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Siena College economic professor Aaron Pasidi is here. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Cool house.
I think people who might not have the best Valentine's Day should listen to a couple of Billy Bragg records.
Yeah, I think it'll make life better.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And has been Heather has been on the program before, and I was out, so it's the first time I get to work with her, and I'm thrilled. President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Bruschetti. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Very nice to have you back.
Got my flowers yesterday.
Did you? Very nice. Yeah. That's good. Roses?
Carnations.
Roses, not carnations. No, roses. Actually, very, very pretty. Not in plastic, but they did come with a vase, and... You're right. I have about 20 vases.
Right.
All right. Well, glad we got that working.
It was glass.
Excellent.
Now I got to go buy loose flowers with no rubber bands and no plastic. That's great.
You don't need the little powder either. Just give that back.
Hold the powder. Hold the plastic. Hold the rubber band.
You want me to go with you?
Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Too many vases of Eve.
And there you go. And we wish you all a happy Valentine's Day. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us get started and talk about what is making news today. And we welcome your letters. However, we do ask that you keep them short and you pre-read them and you don't abbreviate because that'll make our life much, much easier. Alan's life, actually, but for all of us. Attorney General William Barr delivered an extraordinary rebuke of President Trump on Thursday, saying that his attack on the Justice Department had made it, quote, impossible for me to do my job, and that, quote, I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody. Mr. Barr has been among the president's most loyal allies and denigrated by Democrats as nothing more than his personal lawyer. But he publicly challenged Mr. Trump in a way that no sitting cabinet member has. Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, I'm struck by the cartoon in this morning's Daily News, which I think it was the Daily News, in which his back shows a picture of Trump there.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's the Roger Stone tattoo.
Yes, yeah. As opposed to Roger Stone. Yeah.
Except that's Nixon, right?
I thought that was...
Right.
Look, I have no idea. I have no idea what's
wrong
really
criminal.
Going on.
Sorry.
But something stinks. That's clear. First thing, I have no idea his motives, but I'll take a couple of guesses. Number one, we know that Trump likes to fire people, and somewhere along the line came the word, okay, you're in danger. So therefore, why not go out in a blaze? That was the first thing, you know, that I thought of. Because we know that this is a guy who has not done one thing to alienate Trump, all along. It is possible that he had some other kind of motive in this, but it certainly isn't characteristic of William Barr.
Do you think, does anyone here believe that perhaps it is a setup in working with the president on this?
Oh, my goodness. So this fight is about as legitimate and real as the one that took place between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan in WrestleMania 1. First of all, whenever I talk about Bill Barr, I just have to say, guy looks like Fred Flintstone. So Bill Yabba Dabba Doo Barr, this is about as far from a legitimate criticism of the president.
Now, which one would be the Rowdy Roddy Piper in this?
I think Billy Yabba Dabba Doo Barr would be. Okay, right. Just because of the hair,
Yeah.
Well, Heather, our new person on the panel tends to take a better view of some of the Republican characters than we do. So, what do you think, Heather?
Well, I do have some suspicion that he was given permission somehow to say something, right? But the underlying fact pattern, right? That Roger Stone was going to be sentenced from seven to 9 years for lying to Congress and what they call witness tampering. Which, give me a break. He told
Randy
Credico not to take the Fifth. So if that constitutes witness tampering, that sends you to prison for 9 years. I think the underlying sentence and the guidelines demonstrate, and the president's reaction to it demonstrate that it was really kind of overkill. I get it. The guy made him go to trial, and there's the penalty for taking something to trial. But I'd be really curious to know, what the opener was, the opening plea bargain was for Roger Stone. Not that he would have taken it. But you want to talk about a cartoon character. I mean, he's like something out of Batman, right? One of the bad guys
in
Batman.
No, you just, whenever you see him walk by, you expect to see oof and pow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for as far as Barr goes, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to assume that an attorney general would be completely independent. I just think that's not the case. I mean, RFK was AG under JFK, right? And they were brothers. It's not a separately elected position.
John Mitchell.
What's that?
John Mitchell with Nixon, right? Went to end up going to jail.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea that they would be completely independent it's not the same as the state.
Nevertheless, is it appropriate for the president of the United States to be interfering in a sentencing recommendation?
Well, I don't know that he was interfering. He was tweeting his usual, his usual, sort of knee-jerk commentary. And does that constitute interfering? I don't know. I mean, Barr apparently decided to say something. To me, it seems a little bit convenient because they are apparently going to reduce the sentence. They're going to disregard the sentencing guidelines.
They're not going to reduce the sentence because that's not within his discretion. Let me just take issue with something that you said.
I'm sorry, I got you.
First and foremost.
Well, wait, because everybody's laughing. We didn't want you to think we were laughing at Heather. Joe opened his seltzer bottle.
And it went all over Dave.
And it went over Dave.
You better call EPA for a cleanup.
That's all right. We call him
four.
That's all right. I see it happen in my church, and I just want to do it to you. Go ahead.
The entire Department of Justice for the United States of America must be the most independent organization on planet Earth because it is one of the most powerful organizations on planet Earth. It cannot be. You can't send a note to the AG. You can't. That's just not. It's just not appropriate. Never. The other thing that struck me about this is you're never going to find a prosecutor who has to go, who conveys an offer, that offer is rejected, and then they prepare and go to trial. And all of a sudden, after trial, I think I'm just going to go back to the original offer.
Oh, I know.
That's just never going to happen. So this idea, what is brazenly idiotic, is this idea that the president can get on Twitter and suggest that they, you know, offer something less excessive, and the Attorney General for the United States of America doing exactly that and then pretending that's just, you know, mere coincidence, when neither one of those people have the ability to control the judge in whose discretion it is to sentence this person. So it's like, talk about creating chaos within the Department of Justice and really not having, and you know, the question you have to ask is the juice worth the squeeze?
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Well, we're all talking about it. So what are what's not being paid attention to? You know, that's my other is this sort of a red herring that, you know, look away, look over here.
Barr told the prosecutors to lay out the evidence for the judge regarding sentences, and the prosecutors laid out the same thing they laid out during trial, and it seems like he's trying to prevent perhaps an insurrection in the Justice Department.
Possibility.
It's a possibility. Right. But let's put this in context. Barr released an extremely misleading summary of the Mueller report when it came out.
He lied.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear who his allegiance is to. He's got a very expansive definition of executive power and how that falls under, you know, the different legal jurisdictions. So this seems to be a pretty impressive act of political theater.
Well, it's also really schlocky. I mean, a very detailed 25-page sentencing memo went in recommending the higher sentence. 24 hours later, a new memo goes in with the names of the attorneys who are on the case off it. It was a 4-page unconvincing memo. Then the president starts tweeting at Judge Amy Berman Jackson, attempting to intimidate her. She does the sentencing next Thursday. Barr has nothing to do really with the sentencing. And so I think, you know, it's not a coincidence that this is all unfolding this way. I'm more worried about what's been revealed in the last 2 days about Attorney General Barr interfering in every case involving Trump affiliates, including in the Southern District of New York, which is revered. And it kind of reminds me that he is on the record saying he gave advice to SDNY on, remember those guys, Lev Parnas and his sidekick, Igor. So Lev and Igor.
You can't forget Igor.
They're in the soup. But you know who was part of that case also? And we haven't heard any legal action against Rudy Giuliani. Did Barr have a conversation about that? And perhaps even most disturbing is not only Barr interfering to protect the president's friends, but also using Department of Justice to go after the president's perceived enemies. Trump is unhappy with Barr because Barr has not indicted Comey. There's whispers that DOJ is going to go after John Brennan. They've already gone after the Bidens.
Well, they're investigating John Brennan. The investigation into how the Mueller report
started.
All of that started is an investigation into John Brennan.
Right. Even though the IG said there's nothing here.
Yeah.
But
well, there's nothing there until there's going to be something.
Which is
there.
Why investigating has to have quotes around it as opposed to, indicting. One of the things I keep thinking about is what do each of these characters, Putin and others, have on Trump? What do they have on him? When we see Roger Stone getting this treatment about you can't do this to him, I keep wondering what Roger Stone could contribute to the conversation.
I don't know that it's so much about Roger Stone and what Roger Stone can contribute as opposed to how can this guy go about erasing, you know, the last 3 years. Because there's nothing more that this president would want than to delegitimize the Bob Mueller investigation. And so if you could unwind and undo all of those cases that came out as a result of that report, then it's like erasing history.
But David, that's what a dictator does, and that's where we're headed. So that this guy can call the shots in terms of jury trials, in terms of sentencing, and everything else.
Well, isn't he making America great again, Heather?
Well, that's it's hard. I have mixed feelings on a lot of it because I think I tend to not be quite as conspiracy minded as some other folks are, but. I think that probably Barr got permission to say what he said, and there is some political theater going on, going back to the original discussion. But the idea that this is that you know, oh my gosh, there's coordination going on there, I think that has always happened between attorneys general. And should the Department of Justice be completely independent? Absolutely. That our system is not set up that way. It's set up
You just can't go back. You just cannot go back in time previous to the last 3 years and ever identify a series of events involving the Department of Justice. I mean, there's been controversies, right? In Texas with David,
David Duke,
the Meridians,
David Koresh.
Yeah. So you've always had Department of Justice controversies, right? But never anything
Branch
that
Davidians.
Has the Branch Davidians. Yes. Apologies, but you've never had anything with tethered to the President of the United States. There's been a lot of faux pas over the years. Not tethered to the President of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, we get a lot more information now. There's a lot more leaking going on than historically there's ever been. There's people, presidents, tweeting at all hours of the day.
The leaking you're always going to get.
Well, this president tweeting at all hours.
I didn't mean any other president.
The leaking you're going to get, and the reason why you're going to get the leaking is because the reality is a lot of the people who work in our government are professional, ethical people who, when they're confronted with orders that are illegal, they are always going to do what they can to send that SOS. And the Fourth Estate is their means.
We need to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Heather Bruschetti with us. We have Judith Ank, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares. Alan Chartok has the letters, and we will go to those right away.
Joe wants to remind you all to keep your letters short. Most of the letters today are short. Oh, happy Carnation Day, panel.
Especially the ones that have the water that shoots.
Roger Stone has been an associate of Trump for decades. My guess is Stone got Trump on the horn and said, if you don't get me out of jail, I'm going to sing about everything I know about you. And that's from Mike in Hinsdale. I did suggest something of that kind myself. I think that's a possibility. Anybody on that one?
I think Stone has the personality to do that. I think that's pure speculation. But given what I know about Stone and how he's acted, I think that's entirely reasonable. That's a really reasonable bargaining chip for him at this point.
Let's also understand that there is also Michael Flynn out there.
Sure.
And something happened along the path to sentencing with Michael Flynn, right? To me, it's just not a coincidence that there's been this sharp deviation from what a traditional trial negotiation would be. Remember that when all of this started, there was one attorney that was managing, you know, the affairs of the vast majority of the defendants and targets in this case. They had an agreement, right? So what's to say that during Stone's trial, you know, he was told, you're going to be pardoned, right? And what's to say with Flynn that, you know, on the eve of sentencing, he didn't get the message that you're going to be pardoned, right? Which is why they both took the course of action that they took.
What I think is interesting and predictable is this was not done particularly well because it's the judge who decides. And so she has the first memo.
But they're trying to put pressure on her, aren't they?
Yeah, but she's got the first memo that, you know, very clearly lays out why he should get 9 years. And then 24 hours later, you get, you know, a book report from a third grader, legal quality, saying no. And they don't even, in their second memo, they just say it should be far less than what the first memo recommended. Do you think the judge is not going to read both? I think what's more likely is the pardon. And so they didn't have to do this
when
dust
the pardon.
Up.
When the pardon. That's a question. When
yeah,
the
when?
Pardon.
I, there's I no mean, question
so
he's going to
what's the motivation for the tweet? Is the tweet to highlight what a excessive sentence this is to justify the pardon down the road and not to try and influence Barr to impose a lesser or the judge to impose a lesser sentence? I mean, that's I guess there's a little reality right. TV aspect right. to all of this. Right. But right. I mean, just standing back 1,000 yards to me. 9 years seems like an awful long time for lying and to
yeah, but that's not the issue here. The issue
yeah,
is
know,
what the president did.
He sent the tweet to prove, and this is for my friends in Massachusetts, he sent the tweet to prove that he's wicked smart.
Wicked smart.
Wicked smart and he's powerful. Yeah.
Now, the first tweet, I'm more concerned about the second tweet where he really attacks the judge. And I'm wondering if that's, I'm overthinking this, but well, is that a setup to get the judge recused?
Because
she hasn't responded yet.
He does. Look.
And she shouldn't.
One of the things that this man has in common is his desire to reach into the various spaces that he has absolutely zero authority. And if he has zero authority that he can't use his power to manipulate, then he goes to social media and he does that. So, you know, when you're looking at the Treasury and you're looking at the interest rates, what has he been doing? He's been criticizing
his own appointee
because he's not either lowering interest rates or what have you. This is just part of the common scheme and plan of this guy.
I just wish he would put as much energy into addressing the coronavirus, for instance.
Wait a minute. He did. He has put a lot of energy there. He said
coronas.
That
Punxsutawney
Don raised his head and said, well, we only have eight more weeks of this coronavirus until the heat comes up, and then it's gone. Punxsutawney Don.
Yeah, but don't you think that this whole thing may have been a pre-announcement to, A, make sure that the base is with him on this, too, and, two, to make sure that people knew that a pardon was coming and that maybe Stone knew that a pardon was coming?
But then why have this whole dust-up if a pardon is coming?
But is it a dust-up?
What do you mean?
Well, it's certainly a mess.
I mean, it's a highly visible mess.
And I just want to point out, this has been so demoralizing to the career staff at the Department of Justice.
Yeah, and I just went between Barr and Trump.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And
that
But, you know, it's unusual for, I think, one attorney totally resigned. The other three took their names off the cases. This is unprecedented.
Yeah.
And this is really having a corrosive effect of that institution, because the attorneys there feel like Department of Justice has been weaponized to basically be the personal law firm for the president to go after his perceived enemies and to protect his friends.
Well, Heather's point is well taken, I think, from earlier, that presidents have always use their attorney generals.
But not like this. Well, I mean, the RFK example is a good one. But in fact, during the Obama administration, there were very strong written rules when you could never, you know, you couldn't interfere in an enforcement case at Department of Justice. And also, Obama's White House counsel was the one who had to communicate with a designated person at Department of Justice. And you know, this is high profile, but every day people call people in federal agencies and say, hey, could you get DOJ to go a little easier? And then I'm not speaking hypothetically. So me as a federal official would never call DOJ and say, can you go easier? But those calls come in regularly.
Back to the letters. Diane says, sad and scary. I think they might be playing good cop, bad cop. Although I don't believe Trump is capable of the nuances of such a ploy. Love you all. And it's signed Diane, parenthesis, who listens every day from New Jersey.
Nice. Oh, our friends from New Jersey.
Yeah. Love New Jersey. Yeah. The Garden State.
Yeah.
Trump might not be smart enough, but Barr is, I think.
Yeah. Is blueberries the official fruit of New Jersey?
Yes, it's the blueberry capital of the world.
You know what I love about New Jersey?
I thought Maine was.
They're what keeps New York out of last place in business climate.
disappointed.
That's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
And they have more federal Superfund
sites. Nice point.
Sites than
very well
other,
done.
Any other state?
We'll continue with the letters on the subject of behind bars. John says, bar. Morning panel, do you think this might be rats preparing to abandon a sinking ship? That's from John.
Nope. It's Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes at the Great American Bash.
So most people don't believe that it's just this guy getting up on his hind legs and saying...
Fake.
Well, don't you think President Trump needs Attorney General Barr more than vice versa?
Yes,
I don't think he knows that. I think his Weltanschauung, his worldview is, I just fire people at my pleasure and it works.
Right. Yeah. Finding spineless enforcers, however, I think is a bit difficult. So he's found the perfect one.
And then we heard from Anon in Albany. Oh, please, does anybody really believe that Barr is actually pushing back on Trump's heinous behavior? If that was true, the next words out of his mouth would have been, I resign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you would have heard something from the president, which we haven't heard from, right? We haven't
heard a
tweet of that magnitude and what we know about Trump's proclivity to chime in on Twitter about anything. You but would think that the combination of those would produce...
I totally think he got permission.
Yeah,
Heather, I think you're right, but also it's... The media is now replaying this clip over and over again. We're going into a long holiday weekend, which is always like the Bermuda Triangle with Trump and tweeting, because he doesn't seem to, you know, enjoy work. Friend and families on long holiday weekends. So
they should just give him a 1,000-piece puzzle.
Yeah. By Sunday, this could get a little rocky.
Anyway, we have one more letter. It's too long, so I'm going to abbreviate it myself. I thank you for that, for your indulgences. And it's from Lynn of Poughkeepsie, who says, I don't buy Bill Barr's diversion. Happy Valentine's Day, and to you. I am with Alan. Something stinks here. I think they are using reverse psychology. I think this is all pre-planned, and he and Trump sat down and agreed that he would go on the media saying this is so that it will legitimize him and the decisions he makes to the American public. I think they are playing good cop, bad cop. Bill Barr is no upstanding public servant and all. And then there's another large portion of the letter.
One of the things that's getting lost here, too, in the media, and if you recall the beginning of the week, there were news clips out there about the possibility that Rudolph Giuliani is providing information to the U.S. Attorney's Office having to deal with the Ukraine and the Bidens.
You buy that?
I do buy that. I do buy that while this man is a target in the Southern District, that there is another district somewhere in the Midwest that has been granted permission to engage with Rudy Giuliani and to flesh out the information that Giuliani's providing from Giuliani's investigation.
And yesterday, CNN reported that the president said, yes, he did send Rudy Giuliani to Ukraine to find dirt, which is the total opposite of what he said during the impeachment proceedings. It's all about Rudy.
Well, I mean, all I'll say to any of that is it worked, right? I mean, Biden's and he's polling at 7% or 6%. Now, some of that is because he hasn't really performed that well, but certainly the cloud of the scandal, whether it's real or not, or whether it was inappropriate for the president to have the conversation that he did, any of that stuff, it really kind of put all that behind you and look forward. Biden, who I think at the beginning of all this was viewed as the best candidate to defeat President Trump, is
Whose fault? Whose fault do you think that is? Is that Biden's fault, or is that Trump's fault?
You know, I don't know. I think that there's. I think you get yourself in trouble, and the public doesn't like it if there are perceived favors done, even though they're done all the time. You know, so I think that the underlying root of Hunter Biden getting appointed to this board of this company, and I mean, it's so unfortunate that we're having even the discussions about it, but people don't like that. So how it came out?
See, I agree with you. And the reason why I asked that question is because Joe Biden and all of those people who surround Joe Biden sat back and watched the Republican Party, all of their PACs, and billions of dollars being poured in to elevate a non-issue like Benghazi and to elevate a non-issue like a server right? It was played relentlessly, and an entire network captured this and managed to destroy the odds-on favorite to be the first woman president in the United States, right? They sat and watched all of this. So on day one, here we have Hunter Biden, who's been appointed to Burisma in Ukraine. Okay.
And has had, you know, well-documented problems
your
with
daughter,
substance
Your daughter
abuse.
And I your mean, sons, they're all, like, literally at the teat of our federal government right now, just getting full, right? So, but here you have,
Pink
again,
picture there.
Millions yeah. and millions of sure, dollars being poured in to
You're
besmirching, you know, Biden. And his team, and Biden's team, is sitting back and saying, okay, we're not going to take this on. It's like history has just taught you the greatest lesson. So the fact that this man is polling where he's polling and he finds himself politically almost one foot in the graveyard, to me, it's all about the failure of Joe Biden.
I agree
and
with
his
you, and it's also
team.
Predictable.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, the way you make predictions, you go back scientifically on how he's done in all his other runs for president, and you find the same thing. Yeah. No,
well,
it is
on he's
Joe.
Never won a primary, a state primary in four races. But so today, what are the odds that DOJ is starting an investigation of Bernie Sanders, Mike Bloomberg, Amy Klobuchar? Is DOJ going to do the dirty work of looking for dirt to start a perceived investigation?
Maybe. I have to believe that there's no way. I mean, I have to believe that.
That's, I hope you're right.
You know, for all of the cynicism, I just.
But they did it on Biden because Biden was the perceived front runter.
Yeah, it isn't so much
he
cynicism.
He did it too early.
It isn't so much cynicism because I will tell you this as a person sitting here in Albany, right? At the beginning of silly season, you're always going to get what appear to be legitimate complaints about political activity, right? And you have an obligation to at least engage in a preliminary, you know, investigation.
You're talking about yourself now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And so what makes you think the Department of Justice isn't fielding all sorts of complaints about Bernie Sanders and everybody right now? And any respectful prosecutor would look at that and say, it's the silly season. We got to put this aside, get to it after everything's done. Not this guy.
Right? We're late. I'm sorry. We're late for a break. We're going to do that. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Heather Brachetti, Judith Ank, Aaron Pacitti, and David Soar. As we go back to your letters.
Good morning, panel, says Naomi of Beacon. Everything out of this White House, his cabinet or associates, is all smoke and mirrors to hide what they are actually doing, being the destruction of our democracy one slash at a time. May I suggest never spending more than a minute on these slashes and go to what is happening on the environment, State Department, education, interior, weapons, etc.
Economy.
Good point.
And Martin says Barr. Just a friendly reminder to the panel that William Barr was instrumental in George Bush's senior pardoning people involved in Iran-Contra. One of the officials of the defense secretary was actually charged with lying to Congress. This has always been who he is, and the Stone saga is merely a continuation of Barr's overt politicization of the Justice Department.
Which supports the tweet, meaning, I got this.
Right.
Just let me do the corruption on my own and don't make it so visual.
And Rita says, drama. Trump drummed up Roger Stone, Bill Barr drama, to get back on the front page during the Democratic primaries.
And do you know why he can get in the front pages instead of the Democratic primaries? Because these people aren't saying anything that the average person wants to connect with. I am so tired of healthcare policy and getting into the weeds of all of it. Like, speak to Americans about job and security. You know, the Democratic debates have been nothing but an abysmal failure, in my opinion.
Oh, it's all about to change because Bloomberg will be there.
Mike.
Well, no, it's a big thing. I mean, I have so much respect for what Bloomberg is doing.
Yeah.
Yesterday, of course, everybody was after Bernie. We talked about it at 7:40 this morning because he rode first class in the plane. Well, you know, there are some perks people are allowed to go, and he's a decent
Maybe
man.
He had extra miles.
Yeah, well, that's what I would immediately think is you have frequent flyer miles.
Hey, I flew United last week. I couldn't even cross my legs. This guy got in first class. Mm-hmm. Good
God
for
bless.
You, Bernie.
Well, yeah, and if you're a little fellow like I am, then, you know, you don't have any problem with the kinds of problems you have, David.
I will try to get
tall.
Little. What did you say? You'll try to get?
I'll try to get little before I
yeah.
fly.
Yeah.
Dear panel.
When you figure that out.
Can you please take a minute to remember those lost or injured in the Marjorie Stoneman High School shooting on this day in 2017? Mm. Perhaps comment on what has been accomplished re-gun control of violence by the surviving students. Thank you. We cannot forget. And that's from Sarah in Woodstock.
These kids continue to be an inspiration. The idea that you can, I work with victims of crime all of the time, and the thing that I'm always humbled by is their strength and ability to overcome that trauma. Now, it would be one thing if these kids just carried on with their lives and managed to achieve success despite what's happened to them. To me, their courage is on a different level, because they're now out there forcefully advocating for the safety of other people and all of their political activity. I just take my hat off to them.
Similar to the parents in Newtown, Connecticut. I mean, I just don't know how people find the strength.
That's the one I keep coming back to.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we don't want to compare what's worse, but
they're all horrible.
All of them, and then the fact that the parents and then the students can muster the emotional strength to be strong and moral voices for reducing gun violence is just astonishing.
Think about them now when they go to the Capitol and they're having these conversations and they're faced, you know, with people who are sitting there talking about statistics or talking about, you know, for the Bill of Rights, right? I mean, you've lost a child sitting that you packed a lunch for,
right?
You know, that you put a raincoat on, and you know, you sent that child to school. You lost that child because of
that. That's such a profound point. For those of us, we have 2 5.5-year-old grandchildren, and you just know what sense of loss, what sense of devastation this has to do to a family. And I think sometimes we see aggregate. So many people were killed so many kids were killed as opposed to what one kid being killed means to us.
So thank you, Sarah, for raising that.
Yeah. And Thomas says, comment, some see a dictator in the making in Trump. I see and hear a man who is in the early stage of dementia, and it can only get worse. What there is to fear is that this country could reelect such a man to a second term. Then our country will truly be on the road to insanity. Tom from Catskill.
Tom said dictator in the making. That
muffin's
generous. Already been baked.
Not fully formed.
You know? that muffin's already baked. You can take that out of the oven, man. That dictator's there.
People from Catskill are very nice. He was being generous.
Very polite.
All right.
Okay, and then we heard from John in Sarasota, Florida.
Hello, Florida.
Mm.
This is so transparent. The translation is, your, parenthesis, Trump's, tweets only serve to expose the mendacity with which I, parenthesis, Barr, am performing the borderline and outright unethical and potentially illegal things I am doing for you. So please stop doing that. It makes me, parenthesis, Barr, look like your henchman and contradicts the moral upstanding image I am straining to project.
It's like a play.
Yeah. It probably works better on paper than it does in read out loud.
What's his name?
His name is John from Sarasota.
And
John, it's 19 degrees in the Capital District today.
It's going
Put
down.
The newspaper down and go enjoy the water.
Come on, that just sounds like you're jealous.
I am very, very jealous.
Can
I'm
we
not
stay
letting,
with you this weekend?
Yes, yeah. I'm not letting Trump's tweets
the whole panel is
keep
coming.
Me out of the ocean today.
Well, just because he's down there doesn't mean he's not right.
Oh, well, he is right.
Let's just say that. And we heard from Roger in Utica. Good morning, panel. It is nearly unprecedented for high ex-cabinet officials, ex-presidents, and Supreme Court justices to publicly criticize their predecessors or president, as several former attorney generals did this week, and rightly so. Well, I could just point out before I finish the letter that former former congressmen, former senators, former...
Former White House chief of staff.
That's very different. Perhaps it is time for Presidents Bush, Carter, Clinton, Obama to make a joint public statement warning all just how inappropriate and dangerous President Trump's multiple attacks on individuals, vital institutions, rule of law, and the Constitution are. Clearly on the road to tyranny. Roger from Utah.
That would be nice, but all that's going to do is further strengthen Trump's base. It's just going to make him look like the outsider who is, you know, just being attacked from
from
the deep state or whatever. And I mean, I agree with the writer that people do need to speak up about this, but I think the politics of this, it was the same thing with Nancy Pelosi ripping up the speech. Good for her. All that does is make Trump supporters more hardened.
And
more
actually,
politics more polarized.
Well, that brings her. That I mean, I think that brought her to his level, and I think that's too bad. I think that's too bad, and I agree with you. I think that if you had former presidents all come forward and basically express concern, even it would be they're ganging up on him, and I think his base would
be reinforced. I don't agree with either of you. I think you're both dead wrong, and okay. I want to make that clear.
Welcome, Heather.
The idea here is that if you don't fight back, you look like a jerk. You look like Joe Biden. And if you do fight back, you get some admiration. I think what Bloomberg is doing, for example, is extraordinary. He is answering. He's answering this guy. He calls him a midget. He comes back and he calls him a name. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
I would just like to. I'd like to disagree with some here. I don't agree that the presidents should weigh in. The former president should weigh in. It's one thing to have this particular person destroying every single norm that we have in government. It's another thing for people who respect those norms to begin doing it themselves in response to this person.
Yeah, I agree.
Lastly, I just want to say, seeing Ray Graff in a red shirt on Valentine's Day, I've never seen a man wear his heart on his sleeve that.
I'm all rosy, doesn't it?
I think you're wrong. I think we're in a desperate position. We're in a desperate position in this country. And that we have a guy who is leading us down the road to totalitarianism, and that any way to fight back against this guy, I was going to use another word, which would lose us our license, I was going to, I think is appropriate.
There is a way to fight back, and that's this November, because you've got to get rid
of... Well, how do you get to November?
Well, you got to get rid of... If you can't get rid of him, you got to get rid of people like Lindsey Graham, and you got to get rid of people like Mitch McConnell and Susan Collins.
That was interesting that McConnell sided with Barr on this objection. That was fascinating, don't you think?
McConnell?
Which really has the guts of a flea. So therefore, I got to assume the setup concept is quite right.
All right. We're late for a break, but we have time for one more letter to get it out.
David says, let's not lose sight of how dangerous it is that the president is trying to minimize the crime of lying to Congress and continue to make it a lesser branch of government. And listening to one of the panelists seemed to imply it's not that serious a crime and that the Stone sentence was too extreme. It seems in part to be working. Scary.
All right. I also just want to point out that Kathleen wrote, she was just wants to let us know that, please, if you have extra vases, bring them to your local florist. They really need them.
Or to Goodwill and various places.
I think everything takes the
Thank you, Kathleen. Goodwill.
The Goodwill. But they can be
reused.
Yes, indeed. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll go to more letters. We'll go to more conversation with our wonderful panel. But first, we have news with the red-shirted.
The red shirt.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Judith Ink, Aaron Pacitti. Heather Bruschetti is with us, as is David Soares. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org, and we go back to the letters now.
Okay, what does Alan mean? Could Alan please explain why he has, quote, so much respect for what Bloomberg is doing? Are the snarky tweets it, or is there more? I'll take that under consideration. I'm not going to particularly answer that right now, because there are so many more things to do and so many wonderful panelists. Mike says, President Bloomberg, I have a strategy tip for Bloomberg. Why not have a private meeting with leaders of the African-American community like President Obama, Al Sharpton, or other members of religious, business, and political community to discuss their concerns? Would it make it look like Bloomberg cares? Well, besides the snarkiness of the letter, let me just say that I think the most brilliant thing that Bloomberg is doing right now is that incredible ad from Barack Obama. And I have to assume that if Barack Obama didn't want him playing those remarks, he would have called him and said, take that down, which he clearly has not done. And so, therefore, I think to some degree, your advice is being taken. Economy, what a joke. Hello, panel. Look at what Obama got to work with. Let's try again. Hello, panel. Look at what Obama got to work with and what Trump got to work with as far as the economy goes. Mm-hmm. And anybody with a common sense should see Trump's claims are a laugh. He has boosted the economy at the cost of the national debt and therefore the future of America. What a joke.
Well, I think boosting the economy is a real stretch. I think he, almost in spite of himself, has presided over a good economy. It seems like he's trying to wreck it with the trade wars and with China and a lot of his other policies. So, even with the tax cut and the increase in federal spending, I don't think that's doing much.
But hasn't he boosted the economy for the wall manufacturers and wall builders? And they're shifting more money from the Pentagon for that purpose.
Walls that come down in the wind.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it is the first time you've seen big gains in the lowest percentile in income in decades.
Is that his doing?
Whether or not he gets credit for it is an entirely different question.
It's not the credit. The question is it his doing that is happening?
Well, market confidence is his doing, and the tax cut, getting that through, I mean, arguably is his doing, although I think there was bipartisan agreement on most of the elements of that tax cut plan before he took office. So the fact that it got done, I don't know. Is it his doing or not? You can look at the data on bipartisan pieces of legislation more in his first year than in the past like six presidencies. So stuff has gotten done and we're all being distracted by a lot of other noise. But I don't know whether or not this is going to last anyways, because I think the coronavirus situation, we're going to see some immediate impact. And I defer to my professor over here, but I think that's going to, and the timing might be perfectly awful for him for election. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah. So the tax cut, I think it provided a stimulus for about two quarters because business investment has declined for the past three quarters. So the corporate tax cut, which was supposed to unleash business investment and, you know, bonuses to workers and all of that, you're just not seeing that. I mean, Heather did point out that, yes, wage gains for, you know, low-skilled, marginalized workers has been growing the fastest it has in decades, but the income gains and wealth for the top 1% has grown probably by a factor of three or four of that.
Barbara from Rhinebeck says, have a nice Valentine's Day. Meanwhile, suppose a Democrat does win the presidency in 2020. She or he ascended to the now throne as the top leader of this damaged country. Will the new president now order or suggest the Justice Department investigate Trump, Barr, or anybody else associated with this amoral current president and his administration? As Barbara in Rhinebeck.
Barbara in Rhinebeck, they absolutely will.
You think so?
Absolutely.
You think they'll take prisoners?
They will. They will go back and investigate the offenses that have taken place that are currently. Look.
Which ones?
If you put your ear to the ground right now, you could hear the shredding of paper, you know, in the White House, right? As soon as a new president comes into office and begins to declassify some of these materials that have been improperly classified for the purposes of keeping it at bay, you're going to see things unravel.
All right. We also heard from Doreen Poughkeepsie Potam. I believe David is wrong. People are generally greatly concerned about health care, and the Dems need to keep talking about it, especially the fact that Trump is trying to do away with protection for those with pre-existing conditions. Not everyone in the private sector has health care, unlike those in the public sector.
Then she must find those debates absolutely riveting.
I mean, I do, but I'm also a very biased audience.
I don't know if I would blame the candidates. I think they're too long. Like the last one in New Hampshire was 3 hours.
Way too long.
You know, and also the format, it is not conducive to like actual exchanges. I think they've got to redo how the debates are done. And that's something that the candidates don't really control. Mm. Like, you know, how about like, you know, town hall meetings or rapid fire, you know, 1 minute on this and then 10 minutes on something like perhaps the economy or, you know, are we in a permanent war? It's hard to address those issues in 90 seconds.
I think Bloomberg actually captured part of what David was just saying about the focus being almost exclusively on healthcare to such a granular degree that people were
turning off.
And so what does he do? He comes out with a commercial for the Super Bowl about gun control, which no one was talking about, really. I mean, I watched, okay, I didn't watch entirely the debates because they were really kind of boring. I tried, you know, but I didn't see any discussion about gun control. Maybe there was some, but I thought he sort of grabbed an issue that had been left by the side of the road because everyone was so focused on
a gutsy move.
Yeah.
And the reason it's gutsy is because it may not be as gutsy as people think, is because every poll shows the American people want something done about guns.
Right. Even NRA members. I think Bloomberg may benefit from not being on the debate stage.
I agree with that. And I wondered when the Democratic National Committee decided that Bloomberg would fit in on the future debates, whether or not that was good for him. I agree with you. I think that's exactly right. And one has to wonder what that was all about. Were they trying to kill him or help him?
Well, Bradley Tusk was on, it was a satellite radio yesterday, and I heard him talking about how, you know, don't expect too much. He's not known for his debating skills. And, I mean, really setting the bar, trying to set the bar low.
That's kind of true.
So, well, apparently, at least the interpretation of Michael Smirkanich, who was the interviewer, was that, yeah, they're intentionally trying to set the bar low because they think he's going to kill it. And they think, you know, he's going to hit it out of the park. So they're looking for positive feedback.
Well, whatever you think of Michael Bloomberg, and I have mixed feelings, very positive and some not so positive.
Sure.
He is not a great orator. I mean, if you listen to any of his State of the City addresses, I think he's really smart. I think his heart is in the right place on a lot of issues. I think he'll be ready on the debate stage, but, you know, getting through a half hour speech with him is rough.
I just have one word. Confefe. Okay. Let's just look who he's going to be dealing with here, all right? I mean.
But, you know, Trump really changed the playbook for how campaigns are run and what you can do. And I don't think playing the traditional political campaign game is a successful strategy against Trump.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that always works, but just how his base responded, how he attracted a lot of swing voters in very important states, really, really requires Democrats to have a different approach to dealing with him. And maybe the Bloomberg approach is the right way to do it. I don't think getting into the weeds about healthcare policy is the way to do it, despite the fact that I think it's a really good economic and humanitarian policy. So I don't know if Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot.
So my understanding as far as Bloomberg and the debates is that Bloomberg, the next debate is February 19th, and that I think he just has to come in one more contest, one more poll, at 10%,
yep.
and then he'll qualify.
A few more million in advertising will get him there.
So we assume we'll see him on
the 19th. Their big winners are the TV and radio stations and internet ad sites that are receiving unprecedented amounts of money.
Go radio.
Shall we get some letters in?
Please.
Okay, here we go, real fast. Heather, as the new member of the Roundtable, Heather brings in a new and refreshing point of view, helps to make the conversations move along. And that's from Diane, Deanne. Do you know anybody like that?
No, but thank you. Isn't that nice? I appreciate it, because I was terrified,
I just saw her texting in her phone. I don't know if that's really funny.
Don't worry, they'll turn on you soon.
Yeah.
Ted from Clifton Park. The other president, Alan is right. I like this one. The other president should make a statement. Karl Popper said it best. We cannot tolerate intolerance. We civilized, in quotes, Democrats have taken the high road when they go low too much. Like the Republican consultant Rick Smith said, Democrats take a soup ladle to a gunfight. No more. Tolerating intolerance in the name of no more, I see. tolerating intolerance in the name of protocols. Ted from Clifton Park. And here's another one from Stacy. I agree with Alan. Taking the high road with Trump does not work. Bloomberg is speaking the only language Trump understands. I love Bloomberg's replies. Give it to him, Mike. I like Mike, or I'm with Mike. He has it has a nice ring. And that's from a Warren supporter, Stacy. And then we heard from Teresa in Saugerties. Hello, panel. Boy, this is a good morning for me. I agree with Alan. It's time to hit back hard with smart repartee. Bloomberg's answer about Trump's mini-Mike remark was right on target. Bloomberg said height is judged from the head up. Trump hates to be laughed at. And we heard from Roger Stone. We heard from Mike. It says Roger
from Florida.
Well, we may have, actually.
Maybe he was the guy from Sarasota.
Yeah, right.
Roger from West Palm. Alan is right.
It never ceases to amaze me when otherwise rational persons claim 9 years is too much time for a powerful white man to serve in prison. Imagine if Roger was caught with an ounce of... psilocybin mushrooms?
Psilocybin.
Psilocybin. Oh, sad.
You guys are familiar with that term?
Well, both of them seem to jump at the microphone to provide you with the correct pronunciation there, Alan.
Or 25 marijuana plants. I am sure you would be grateful for a 9-year sentence. Mike in Petersburg. And then Christopher says, Bloomberg is toast in the general. He has a history of racist, unconstitutional, racist policies, sexual harassment that will enrage the left, and advocates for policies like the soda ban and gun control that will motivate the right. Trump will run to his left and right just like he did with Clinton. What argument can Bloomberg make that Clinton didn't? Thanks always, Chris from Albany. There are many of us who don't agree with that, but that's why we read letters that we don't agree with.
Bloomberg could say, I ran New York City and I did it really well, and it's the biggest city in the U.S. And, you know, I mean, I guess there was this great article that a New York Times reporter did after he left office, basically sort of a reflection of how could this guy say some of the stuff that he said and still get reelected? And it sort of kind of reminds me of, you know, the parallel of how can this president say and do some of the stuff that he says and still have this hugely strong base.
Interesting.
I do think, and I know we're all going to go ding, ding, ding and go to our corners here. I do think that the stop and frisk issue is going to be a huge problem for Bloomberg. And waiting 5 or 6 years to apologize after you announce for president is not going to cut it. And I think this is a legitimate criticism that he's going to have to figure out a strategy,
David,
on how to address it.
Well, I think that if you're really speaking into the hearts of African Americans, yes, the stop and frisk is a problem for him. He should have been much more intense and deliberate in his apologies for it. But I also think he can pivot to his commitment to ending gun violence, which is an issue that plagues, mm-hmm. you know, inner city America, from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. And I think there is a needle to be thread there in order to garner the support of the African American communities.
And then we heard from Judy. Good morning, panel. I listen every day. Looking into William Barr's eyes on the Morning Joe replay of yesterday's interview, I see fear, capital letters fear, in his eyes as he carefully parses his words. Am I the only one?
We don't know what we see in Bill Barr's eyes. I just think that, you know, his comment, he sat down with a reporter. This was very intentional. It wasn't like he was on the run leaving the building and they caught him.
Accidentally said too much.
Right, right. I mean, he walked into that interview wanting to say that, and who knows what. I mean, it's just like getting into his head is, you know, pointless.
Now, Linda, her subject line says, lock him up. I love Joe Biden. In the beginning, I was leaning towards supporting him for president. But after the Ukraine debacle, I couldn't stomach the thought of another campaign with a chant of lock him up. Linda, well, you know what, Linda, and I understand your letter perfectly. I have to say, Trump isn't going to stop. Mm-hmm. In other words, it'll either be lock him up or some other piece of
offensive
trash that he'll, mm-hmm. that he'll do. Mm-hmm. And it'll be with anybody who's running against him. Biden. Yes, panel, Trump's accusations against Biden have hurt his candidacy, but Biden's lack of a strong and consistent response has hurt himself more in the public's eyes. Why not fight back and bring attention to Trump's children getting favors? Carl in Chesterfield, Massachusetts.
That's exactly what he should have done, except he should have done that about 5 months ago, 6 months ago, maybe even a year ago.
Michael says, Biden, the Democrats shot themselves in the foot again by investigating Trump and Ukraine. They brought about the headline of Biden and his son. Perhaps if they never did that investigation, Biden would be polling higher. Perhaps schmaps. You know, you can
I didn't know the Democrats investigated Biden and Ukraine.
Yeah.
Well, I think what he meant was the investigating of Trump. There was
the impeachment.
Yeah, I hate to say it.
Ukraine.
Quid pro quo.
Got it.
There was no quid pro quo as well.
There was never a quid pro quo.
Mike in Hudson. I love Hudson. I've ever told you that. I flew for first class into Albany last week due to airline status. I'm sure Bernie logs exponentially more miles than I do. Is this really something you're fixated on while the next breath-lauding racist billionaire oligarch Mike Bloomberg? Give me a break. You think Mike is from Hudson is for Bernie?
I think that we get so caught up in focusing on irrelevant details like John Edwards' $400 haircut and and Sarah Palin's suits and how much she spent on clothes when she was running, and I mean, these are all really irrelevant to someone's ability.
A point I tried to make about the Bernie sitting in first class.
Yeah, I just have to disagree because look, man, a $400 haircut. What are you cutting, man? What are you using to cut my hair for $400?
Price for you, probably.
I'm just saying, man. I'm glad I don't have that problem.
Well, and he had to impress the woman he was cheating on.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
No, but my point is that it's so easy to pick apart any person for something. Right. You know, do you prefer a $7 coconut latte over regular man's coffee, and does that make you a bad person?
$2.75 for a small bottle of Prel would have been all right. You know what I mean?
Paul writes, Bloomberg for president. Good morning, panel. I'm not sure if you have discussed this, but as a Republican from New York, I was very interested in Bloomberg until he started backpedaling on the stop and frisk. I believe you should take credit for it, as it made New York City a much safer place.
I wish Bloomberg would have run in the Republican primary. I think that would have been
he
much
would not
more
have
helpful.
Won. He wouldn't have come close.
Well, I don't think he's going to win in the Democratic primary. So
I'm not so sure you're right.
I'm not so sure you're right there either.
I know. You all thought I was incorrect when I said Biden was not going to be the nominee. But I think if Bloomberg is running to make sure Trump doesn't get reelected, it would have been much more effective for him to take on Trump in the Republican primary.
Okay. And David Sorensen Bloomberg says, Ed, with one exception, I believe, the panelists spent most of the week admiring Michael Bloomberg's run for the presidency. Would you please make sure to have David Sorensen weigh in on Bloomberg's candidacy? Sounds like a setup from Ed.
Yeah, it does, actually. Yeah.
I think people are starving for moderation, and that's the appeal to Michael Bloomberg. I think what they're hearing from the candidates right now are ideas that, quite frankly, scare people somewhat. And I think that the appeal that Mr. Bloomberg has is if Uncle Joe is going to trip, you know, during the course of this race, they want someone who can take that particular lane. And that's the reason why I think Bloomberg is so appealing.
I disagree with that because being a moderate only works when you have bipartisan support. So you have another side willing to work with you in Congress. And it's clear that the Republicans are just not going to do that. So I don't know why people are so focused on moderation.
Well, wait a second. It's not always, Aaron, it's not only, moderation. It's Republicans. It's also the independents. It's the independent vote which will win or lose this election.
Sure. I just want to point out the most recent poll shows that every Democrat who is running against Trump, every Democrat wins.
I think Grimace from McDonald's wins against Trump.
And the person who comes out with the and it's pretty tight. It's not a big band. And the candidate who does the best against Trump is Bernie Sanders. And then you go down every single Democrat you know, today, and anything obviously can change, but every single Democrat beats Trump in the general.
Except that the bookies are not saying
Bernie
that.
Bernie Sanders would beat Trump in the general. I just don't believe it. I mean, I really think there's a huge part of the country that no way, no how would vote for Bernie Sanders. And I think that a moderate candidate has got the best chance of winning. I personally, you know, I think Klobuchar is pretty appealing, but there's already attacks on her record as a prosecutor now. So people are going to come out of the woodwork to attack everyone who's a front runner. And some of it is going to be them shooting at each other. And that's going to make it harder for anyone to win in a general.
I want to get to this brilliant letter, and then I'll let you guys go. Teresa says, Alan is right. That's why it's brilliant. These are extraordinary times. We cannot wait for November. Norms no longer apply. With this man, anything is possible. It's a break the glass time. Everyone must speak out against this insane tyrant. And that's from Teresa.
The phrase of 2020, break the glass.
Yeah,
I like
right?
it. And we heard from Catherine, who said, do you think that the strong economy is due to decrease in regulations? That's an interesting question. What do you think?
Some part of it. I mean, energy, I think, certainly, although Obama allowed for some development of energy, but I think some of the policies regarding energy have definitely helped. But you know, there's a cost to that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's really deregulation certainly can increase profits. There's no doubt about it. But the global economy has a lot more to do, I think, with it. And I'll defer to my economist friend here.
Yeah, there's the oil tanker analogy with the U.S. You know, with the U.S. economy, and then the super oil tanker with the world economy. These things kind of steer independent and have so much momentum that, barring any massive regulation or deregulation, that it's really not going to change the direction of that.
Although it definitely is affecting the climate change issue in a big way, which is also an economic issue.
10 seconds.
Sorry, I just had to get that
in.
No,
I understand. Yeah.
How does the coronavirus impact the global economy?
Oh, we're seeing China. Can we talk about that after the break?
It's not good.
Yeah. In fact, we have to talk about it after the break because I have to take a break. Alan has to leave us a little bit early, so he's going to do that. Alan, we hope you have a beautiful weekend. We'll be back with the rest of the group right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Judith Ink, Aaron Pacitti, Heather Bruschetti, and David Soares. And said Alan had to go early, so we welcome all of you and thank you for sticking with us here. We have letters. This one from Susan, who says, we were going to start off with the economics question that David had right before the break.
The coronavirus?
About the coronavirus,
sure.
Yes.
So this is interesting. It's not a traditional economic problem in that there are not traditional economic solutions to this. It has to do with quarantining cities and locking down plants. It interrupts the whole global supply chain from China to Japan, Japan to Germany, Germany to England, England to the U.S. So what the Chinese government's doing by injecting capital into financial markets and talking about lowering interest rates isn't going to have an effect if these plants are under lockdown because of a quarantine. I've seen reports that it could send the global economy into a recession. Possibly that would primarily be due to China sinking rapidly. In the U.S., the effects are probably going to be substantially muted. You're talking about shaving a couple percentage points off of GDP. I don't see this as having any major impact. Jerome Powell yesterday was talking about how the Fed's likely to respond to it, and he just said, we're on guard. If things get more serious, we'll lower interest rates. So it seems like U.S. policymakers aren't particularly concerned with the economic effect of this in the U.S. I think the uncertainty that it creates for the global economy is non-trivial, but certainly not catastrophic. The bigger risk is that the question that poses the bigger risk is, have we reached peak impact of the coronavirus yet? And I don't think anybody has an answer to that. So if this becomes, 10 times the size it is now, then sure, there could be impacts. If this is the peak, then it's probably not going to happen. But it's really important to remember that traditional economic solutions like government spending and tax cuts or central banks lowering interest rates is not going to fix or stimulate the economy in China.
Well, that leads me to my follow-up question, because now that makes me curious if Japan's economy is just because we have assembly lines, right. We require parts for certain things. And if we do the forensic on China to say, okay, what do they produce in the global economy? And all of a sudden, those ports are shut down, mm-hmm. right? I would imagine that that's going to impact on Chevy's ability to build a car in Canada or BMW's ability to have a certain part for a car right. in South Carolina.
These are not simple manufactured goods that are that have stopped being produced. You're talking about, you know, a long time lag and setting up the plant to produce custom parts for, you know, very specific, you know, auto manufacturers that you were referring to. So it's not like producers can just say, oh, yeah, we'll move the operation to Mexico and problem solve that. So there is the global contagion risk. Again, it really is dependent on how serious the virus becomes, if the quarantines start to get lifted or if this spreads and becomes something much more dramatic. So, there is a contagion effect.
Part of the challenge here is a government that refuses to be very transparent the depth of the problem. Now, on the one hand, they're trying to just say, okay, well, you know, we got control of this. We're moving people out of the town, out of the city. And then on the other hand, they're now employing the technology, the cell phone technology, right, mm-hmm. that will allow for them to know So just, you know, that leads me to conclude that they're more concerned about this than they were before, because if your phone hit off a cell phone tower anywhere near this town, they are now getting all of this information from the cell phone companies. They're sending you texts. And you must respond. And their quarantine response is anything. It's nothing. When I say nothing, I mean it's not a stellar medical response. It's more of a militaristic response.
Sure, right.
They're forcefully getting people out of, you know, hospitals and towns, and then forcing them into these quarantine spaces, which I don't think bodes well for anyone.
Well, but is the quarantine even the right approach? Mm-hmm. That more people died of the flu this flu season in the United States than by a multiple of 10 or 20
right.
than have died from this virus. And, you know, if it's a virus, it's not in this world, it's not going to be contained by quarantine measures.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, shouldn't we be more focused on fixing it? And if we lift the quarantine, can't we avoid some of the economic impact? Can you imagine if we shut everything down during every flu season?
Right, right. Well, this is the second largest economy in the world. And I understand that the factories are starting to open up again. And to Aaron's point that you don't turn on a dime here. I think some parts of the economy will be more hard hit than others. For instance, American Airlines and one other airline said they're going to stop flying into China until late April. Mm-hmm. So that's going to affect tourism in New York City, for instance. But what's really interesting is, you know, the primitive approaches to dealing with this, when what we really need is a vaccine. And then there's the chicken and egg issue of, are pharmaceutical companies going to make money on this? And if they're not, they don't put the resources into bringing the vaccine online. But I think this also tells me that this is a moment when you really need international cooperation. You know, if this illness goes to North Korea, we're not going to get accurate data there. If it goes to the Philippines, again. So the lack of transparency is a problem. There have been major cuts at the Center for Disease Control, and I don't think the United States has the moral authority anymore to bring everyone together who needs to come together to figure out a strategy here. I don't think there's an immediate risk in the United States, although you're still quarantined on military bases if you were in this province. And the most important thing is everyone needs to wash their hands a lot.
Yeah, there was criticism leveled at China by a U.S. official about their handling and refusal to accept assistance from the United States. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there is a prime example of why diplomatic relationships are necessary in times of peace, right? Because, you want to be upset with trade agreements. It's okay. Be upset about trade agreements. Negotiate them. But it doesn't mean that we become hostile or invite hostility. Because in moments like this, when you really need one another and you need the talents and the expertise from every place, you're not going to have access. And this is going to impact us one way or the other. The other thing about China and the government's response, I mean, I find it telling that the very doctor who, disclosed this and was sending out every flare out there warning people about this. This man, instead of being listened to, was taken and locked up
in a gulag, enemy of the people.
Yeah.
Always up for an Ibsen reference. Excellent.
Well done. I love it.
Well done.
Valentine.
You have to reread it every 10 years. Sorry,
whether you want to or not. We have a couple of letters here in our last 5 minutes. We got this from Linda, who writes, I feel like it's Bloomberg's ad agency running for president. Not having heard him in a debate, I don't know where he actually is on the issues. Justin says, I've been astonished to hear the panel over several days and cast of characters generally supportive of Bloomberg's electability. I would happily vote for any of the current Democrats in the field, but I see a macro threat to our political system in Bloomberg's candidacy. Bloomberg is precisely the kind of politician who Trump is a caricature. Trump is possible because both parties are perceived as being in the pockets of billionaires, so running two racist billionaires. What do you think? He says
it's a harsh criticism of Bloomberg, but certainly it is two billionaires from New York City. And I find it curious how Bernie Sanders is the top vote getter in two states so far, and all the conversation is about Amy Klobuchar surging and Bloomberg, and many people have a political crush on Bloomberg. I mean, I'm kind of concerned about billionaires buying races.
Billionaires have been buying races for about the last, 60 years?
Forever.
It's just that they themselves have never decided to run for office. So idea that, money hasn't been a corrupting element in politics is just, it's tragically naive.
On Valentine's Day.
Sorry.
You can be tragically naive on Valentine's Day.
I think the Bloomberg argument is he doesn't have to be beholden to anyone because he's got his own money, right? Which is a valid point, I suppose. But I don't know. I'm not opposed to successful people running for office. I would love to see a woman candidate on that stage, and I personally think it's a moderate is what we need.
Yeah.
Then
you got Amy.
I like Amy, but I already heard an attack on her based on her record as a prosecutor. Some conviction. I mean, and it was on national public. Obviously, someone has been working on this case, I think, from the Democratic side to try and take her out of contention.
But that's every candidate. When Buttigieg was surging for a bit, he became Wall Street Pete. I mean, this is why you have long
that man
primaries.
Had a fundraiser in a cave with crystal chandeliers.
That sounds awesome, doesn't it?
I need to see this cave.
I want to go.
It was beautiful.
It's in Sonoma. It's the Champagne Cave. It's really expensive.
The Champagne Cave.
But
you've probably been there, haven't you?
I know, but I've been to Sonoma, where a friend lives or used to live.
But not in a cave. Go ahead.
There is value in long primaries. You're supposed to have spirited debates.
We have 2 minutes, and I want to just end with this letter then. This is from Dr. Bob, who says, did I hear or have you already chewed on? We have not, so let me ask this. The War Powers Act, the report that 8 Republican senators joined in opposing the renewal of this act. What do you make of it?
It's not a veto-proof number.
Majority.
And I think the president's just going to ignore it. But I think the vote was very significant, and it's great that 8 Republicans voted.
Only 8?
Well, in this day and age.
More than last time.
No, I know it's more than last time, but you're talking about opening up a new front in a part of the world that is extremely volatile.
And you
would think Congress would just want some say in this, even if they agree with it.
And that wasn't the final. That was to move it forward. Yeah, but so still. Any thoughts on that, David?
I just think it's the corrupting force of a maniacal fool.
All right.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day.
There's a bunch of carnations, Dave.
Steve writes, if Trump is reelected, he'll lose popular vote with another Electoral College victory. How's he doing on November 3rd in Great Lakes states really is the main issue.
Yeah. I mean, his victory was largely due to a handful of states swinging in his direction, and those states swung because of a handful of counties in those states. It seems like his path to an Electoral College.
Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, that's where the action is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Florida.
The problem with a long drawn out.
5 seconds.
Have a wonderful Valentine's Day.
Okay. Happy Valentine's Day to you all. Thank you very much. David, Heather, Aaron, Judith, and of course, Alan, thank you. We'll be back right after this.